All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.
This is the ZabeCast, hosted by a Pop-Tart-loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight, and let's go.
Here we go! Tuesday, May 19, 2026. Thank you for downloading, and yes, it is good to be back on the ZabeCast. Did you miss me? I took 2 days off. 2 days off for my annual trip down to the Pinehurst area, Southern Pines, technically, and my annual Malcolm McLeod Memorial, which was a success, asterisk, for the 24th year in a row. More on that at the end of the podcast. So if you're already groaning, saying, oh, God, 2 days off for my favorite podcast, you're going to start with your stupid golf trip I don't give a shit about? No, that'll be at the end. And I'll keep it to 5 minutes or less. Body shaming or uncomfortable truth, two gloves and baby oil for your 8-iron, and she who shall not be spoken of amongst the topics on today's show. But let's start with Aaron Charles Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Aaron is back for another season. Hallelujah. He's what, 41, about to be 42 in December? And he signs a one-year deal with the Steelers for upwards of $25 million, depending on certain incentives and, you know, milestones to reach. He is reunited with his former Packers coach, Bob's big boy, a.k.a. Mike McCarthy. Now, it didn't end well for McCarthy and Rodgers in Green Bay, but I think the narrative of, hey, weren't the two of them not getting along at the end of the year when he was fired midseason or, you know, in December, I guess it was? It's not that they weren't getting along. They weren't winning. They were losing. And the straw that broke the camel's back was a loss at home to the then woeful Arizona Cardinals with, I want to say, Josh Rosen at quarterback. Don't quote me on that. I haven't looked up the box score in a while, but it was a bad loss. It was a loss so bad that McCarthy had lost the team, had lost the locker room. Everything had flown off. It was a rare case in which you have a starting quarterback who is a surefire Hall of Famer, and he's healthy, and he's playing, and the team is losing. That's how bad you knew it had gotten. That's why, you know, Mark Murphy had to pull the trigger and fire him in the season. Which many of the commentators, my God, they treated Mike McCarthy like he was the second coming of Vince Lombardi. Terry Bradshaw, amongst others, on television, this is wrong to do that. What an insult. And I'm like, they just lost to the Cardinals at home. And they're on their way to a sub-500 record with Aaron Rodgers healthy. Yeah, coaches get fired for that, even if you have won a Super Bowl. So it's not so much that it ended with the two of them not seeing eye to eye. It's just that McCarthy's offense, and with the way that Rodgers preferred to do things, it had grown quite stale. Rodgers at the time, and still to this day, loves to sit back, look at what the coverages are, decipher where he's going to go, and pretty much pick out a single read and a single route that he's going to pick apart. And he likes doing that much more than the modern offenses, which have a lot of motion, a lot of side-to-side stuff, a lot of exotic formations. And the league was evolving at the time in which the Packers were doing none of this. And it was just Rodgers back there in a simple 21 personnel setup, couple wideouts in the shotgun, looking out, waiting for the play clock to wind down. Ha-ha! Blue 19! Ha-ha! Green 23! Whatever the cadence is, I should know that. And then, you know, they would try to get a first down and throw it for whatever. And it just got stale. It just got bad. The whole thing was bad. It was rotten. I don't think there's any great animus between the two. But the larger question that has to be asked is, so where are we going with this? What are we doing exactly? And the answer is, you're going nowhere. This is, as I believe Dan Graziano this morning on ESPN's Get Up said, a marriage of convenience. And I said, ooh, that's a good one. I'm going to steal that. Of course, I didn't steal it. I gave him credit for it, so it's not a steal technically. I said, that's good. It is like an arranged marriage. And the McCarthy hire, in part because he's from Western Pennsylvania, he's got Yinzer roots, is a gigantic, hey, how about that? Not that he's not a qualified coach, but there was nothing visionary. There was nothing next 10 years about McCarthy as a hire. The chances of McCarthy keeping intact the streak of Pittsburgh Steeler coaches going 10, 12, 14 plus years in the chair or more is about zero. He's a two-time retread, and he's been around. It could work in the short run. It might be okay. He's certainly qualified. He knows what he's doing, but it's sort of a what are we doing? So they've followed up the what are we doing with an uninspiring head coaching hire with a quarterback comeback, which was long expected, even though Rodgers didn't want to announce it. Wants to do things on his own time. I guess at least he gave him the heads up before June 1st that this was going to happen and signed his deal. How much of a participant he'll be in the full mandatory minicamp, he was in the voluntary OTAs this week, remains to be seen. But I just find it curious to think, so what if they had lost that last game of the season? What if it went the other way in overtime and they missed the playoffs? I would argue that there'd be very little chance they'd bring Aaron Rodgers back. And that they would say, yeah, you know what? We got to move on. So much of the NFL kind of runs on these artificial both narratives and or milestones or benchmarks of, hey, man, we made the playoffs. And look, talk to any Steeler fan. They'll say, hey, it was nice to have a competent quarterback who was running the team because we hadn't had that since Big Ben left. So that was actually enjoyable. They could win 8, 9, maybe 10 games. But again, where is this going? I would feel, if I'm a Steeler fan, that we're just going to be doing all this shit over again, quarterback and head coach, in the span of 2 or 3 years at the latest. But the pain of sucking too much in the NFL is too hard for many teams in today's NFL day and age to even contemplate or accept. There's no long game. There's no tanking in the NFL. When tanking in the NFL would both produce the most immediate impact, especially for the upcoming amazing quarterback class, this is the year that half of the NFL should not be trying. And yet, you don't see this happening. Why is that? I've thought about this a lot. For one, football is a brutal game, physically. And it's hard to ask players to smash their bodies to pieces when you know you're on a suicide mission to lose as many games as possible. Now, the Colts did suck for luck, but it's a little bit different in this regard where you got a Steeler team that could finish just 8-8 or 8-9 now that we got 17 games and miss out on all of the good quarterbacks coming out next year, with Rodgers then retiring for good for the last time and going off to an ayahuasca hut somewhere in the forest and never being heard from again. Sidebar on Rodgers. Still haven't seen a photo of his lovely wife. Very private person, this Brittany with an I. Somebody made the greatest tweet I've seen in a long time, which is, how is it we got all these photos of Diana Rossini and Mike Vrabel? Still haven't seen a single pic of Brittany Rodgers. What do you care about his personal life? You're the problem in the media. Hey, I'm just saying it's very odd. You can say she's a private person, wants to stay private. What kind of life are you having? You, Aaron Rodgers, are a public person, whether you like it or not. You did things on the football field that were the stuff of legend. You were adored in at least multiple, well, certainly in Green Bay, the Jets chapter, don't know. I think they like you in Pittsburgh. You were adored. You were famous. You did things with that godlike right arm that will be the stuff of legend forever. You're not going to get to disappear. It's not how life works. You could try, but it'd be weird and kind of counterproductive. You're going to want to be Aaron Rodgers for the rest of your life. And so much of what you did, you may say, well, I'm more than that, and I don't want to be defined by my football prowess. Life is long. And so, yeah, you're not going to just get to disappear. There's going to be black tie function. There's going to be functions to go to. There's going to be charity events. Are you really never going to have the woman that you love, who loves you, at your side because you're afraid she might get photographed? Now, I know what some of you are saying. Zabe, you idiot. He's not really married. You know, this is just a beard. Come on. I don't know that. I don't care. It's just fascinating to think that he has still kept this person under wraps. And you know the paparazzi, because this is how they get paid. They're dying to get a picture of it. But anyway, back to Rodgers and the Steelers. So the pain of sucking in the NFL is too great. There's no long game. There's no tanking that is overt, which is even better in the NFL because there's no lottery. But I just wonder, the way these dumb milestones get put up on a shelf, like, hey, we made the playoffs last year, barely, and really kind of luckily. What if you had lost that last game? You're really going to bring back Aaron Rodgers? I doubt it. Speaking of the pain of sucking, the Vikings are kind of doing the same thing with Kyler Murray being brought in to both compete with J.J. McCarthy and presumably, they hope, nail the job down. Now, it'll be interesting to see with the Vikings this summer as to what it'll take for Call of Duty Murray to outplay J.J. McCarthy. McCarthy, I assume, is going to play more snaps in August than will Murray. Murray will likely be declared the presumed starter. They're hoping for some of the Sam Darnold magic where they're going to shine up this old lamp and, you know, ask it three wishes. But I think it makes poor sense. I wouldn't say no sense, but it doesn't make solid sense what they're doing in Minnesota. But again, they're worried about Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson endured the suckitude of J.J. McCarthy last year, and they don't want him disgruntled. And it's also not fair to him, but then again, life is not fair. If I were an NFL owner, I would instruct my coach, hey, we're not going to be good this year. And if you think we're going to be good, watch what I'm about to do with your roster. Oh, I'm stripping the roster down. It's going to be a discount roster. And you can bitch all you want, but guess what? I'm going to give you the most impossible job on the planet. And sure, the locker room's going to be pissed. We may lose a star who wants to be paid big money in free agency, but getting in the top three is so important to taking one of these top quarterbacks coming out. I don't give a fuck what our players think. I don't care about a star wide receiver in Justin Jefferson. There'll be more of those. We need a quarterback. Back in Arizona, Jacoby Brissett, who is going to be taking over for Kyler Murray, lifetime journeyman, not a bad quarterback, put up some good numbers this past year. He did not attend the voluntary OTAs, and that was a news item. Apparently wants a new contract. Well, good for him. Somebody please remind Cardinal fans or the media who are making a big deal of this what voluntary means. Well, you know, it's a voluntary team-building exercise. Company would like you to attend. It'd be a real shame, you know. We like working with you. We would like to think we're a family. Fuck all that. If it's voluntary, volunteer out of it. But good for Jacoby Brissett. He may get some more money out of this. The whole voluntary OTAs are I've had people argue, no, it's important. They start installing some things in May. They get guys familiar with certain offensive concepts. And I'm like, so more than they do in late July when the camp opens, when training camp opens, more than the stuff they send home to them on their locked iPads and their other playbooks? Really? Voluntary OTAs are a brilliant, but otherwise empty calorie media avail for every team and every market to keep the NFL somewhere in the mix 12 months a year. And I know I've just done that, given that we're in the middle of basketball season. Before I get to basketball, because football is king, some quick thoughts on the NFL schedule. I'm catching up after 4 days pretty much out of this chair and out from in front of this microphone. The NFL schedule was released, and man, the blob that is the NFL, the ooze, the blob that is consuming the entire sports landscape continues to spread and spread. More international games, more special one-off games in time slots and on days that normally they would not be on. Black Friday, the night before Thanksgiving, amongst others. I don't want to say that Cuban was right when he said pigs get fat, but hogs get slaughtered. The NFL is not going to be a hog that gets slaughtered. However, interesting angle I did not really consider. Headline: TV networks may have more leverage over the NFL and streamers than the league realizes. The conventional wisdom was that, oh my God, the next network deals the NFL cuts with their partners is going to make their knees buckle. They're going to ask for so much money. And they will ask for a ton of money, but who really has the leverage? Here's what the article states. To be sure, the current broadcast partners, ESPN/ABC, Fox, CBS, and NBC, cannot compete financially with tech companies circling the league. Alphabet, a.k.a. Google, which owns Google and YouTube, carries a market cap of roughly $4.78 trillion. Trillion? Jesus. Amazon sits at $2.84 trillion. In a pure bidding war, traditional networks would almost certainly lose. But that scenario assumes one thing that may not actually be true. It assumes the streamers actually want the same packages the networks currently hold. So far, the evidence suggests otherwise. Writes FoxNews.com, Netflix and YouTube have both expressed interest in adding NFL inventory, but consider the types of games that they have pursued. Netflix expanded its NFL package from 2 games to 5 this year, adding a Week 1 international game, a Thanksgiving Eve matchup, and a Week 18 game alongside its Christmas Day doubleheader. The limited expansion aligns with what Netflix executives have said publicly about their strategy. Said co-CEO Ted Sarandos, quote, "We're not bidding on whole seasons of sports, including the NFL." This he told to Fox Business host Maria Bartiromo. Oh, love Maria Bartiromo. Perhaps Netflix will add eventually a few more showcased windows, especially if the league opens more inventory to the market in 2029. But even then, the company appears focused on event programming rather than a weekly full schedule. There are not many marquee standalone windows left for Netflix to pursue. Ding, ding, ding. Thanksgiving Eve already. Oh, boy, that was late. Why? I pressed my ding button. It took forever. All right, that's a little bit better right there. It's also very loud. They say there is not many marquee standalone windows left for Netflix and others to pursue. Thanksgiving Eve already feels like a stretch. Interesting. We shall see. The Commanders' schedule, it's a tough opening three. At Philly, at Dallas, home against Seattle. Ouch. The better teams you catch early on, in which they are at full strength with quality quarterbacks, and all three of those teams qualify, and of course one of them is the defending Super Bowl champs, and doing so two out of three on the road, early in the season when teams are at their full vigor and health, is the worst time to catch the good teams. Doesn't mean you can't beat them, because in part you are at your full health, and that is a key for the Commanders keeping number five, Jaden Daniels, upright, healthy, and with all his limbs intact and working properly. If they can do that, they got a shot at having a season. If they can't, good luck. But they got to win one of the first three. I'm going to look this up right now. What are the odds of teams making NFL playoffs after 0-3? I'm guessing it's under 5%. Ooh, 2.4%. Now, to be fair, that's a stat which also identifies known bad teams. Known bad teams prior to the season have a much greater chance of starting 0-3 because, hello, they're bad. So therefore, they populate a large percentage of that pool of teams that don't make the playoffs. It's the good teams who start 0-3 where you're like, holy shit, you're in real trouble. Or, as George Clooney said in the great Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, damn, I'm a tight spot. A tight spot. Damn, 0-3. Commanders have got to win one of those three. Four night games for Washington and one international game against the Colts. Last 3 weeks of the season are all TBD. TBD or TBA? I think TBD, to be determined. They'll shift it around based on how things are looking at the end of the line. I did look at some other team schedules, and most teams have the Week 18 matchup, the final week of the year, as TBD, because they want to be able to have maximum flexibility there, and I'm not against it, but it seems like the Commanders have more than most teams. For the Packers, their start looks pretty easy. They got two soft games to begin. Again, these are soft on paper and on paper only because, as I like to say, you know, last time I checked, this easy schedule involves all pro teams. There's no barnstorming teams. There's no all-star teams. There's no college teams in here. There's no semi-pro teams. They're all professional teams in the NFL with the same salary cap as we have. At the Vikings, at the Jets for the Packers. Still two road games, though, but that's a pretty good start. Assuming, you know, what we see with teams starting a new quarterback with the Vikings and Kyler Murray. We'll see. The thing that I didn't like from a fan standpoint for the Packers is they've got two games that would be big road draws for fans that is going to be impacted by where they fell on the schedule. The first is the Thanksgiving Eve game in LA. There'll be a lot of Packer fans there because Packer fans are endemic to all 50 states, like a species that has multiplied and spread across the landscape. But I wouldn't know anybody that could sell to their family, hey, we're going to LA on the night before Thanksgiving. Don't worry, we're going to catch a red eye. We'll be back before Thanksgiving dinner with the family the next day. So that's not going to be as loud of a road advantage as they otherwise would have. And then they play the Bears on Christmas Day at noon on the road at Chicago. That's going to be a tougher one to get to. But easy start. They've got a huge pseudo bye in the middle to later part of the season, in which, depending on how you want to calculate it, they've got like one game between November 15th and December 6th. So that's a 21-day stretch with one game. They got a bye, and then they've got the Wednesday game against the Rams the day before Thanksgiving. That's pretty good to keep you from, and also they have a sort of, they have an extended space between their November 8th game and the November 15th game. So yeah, they pretty much have, if I'm looking at it, November 8th to December 6th, that's a month. They got two games in a month. And it happens as the season is starting to enter its biggest grind. It's a pretty good layout of games. But again, they're all pro opponents. So we'll see. Four of the last five games are at home, and that's pretty good. But they should have fired LaFleur for the way he choked every big game, including the game against the Bears in the playoffs. Okay, we done with the football? Good. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron Rye wins the PGA. Some quick thoughts before you listen to my nerdy Capital Golf Game Capital Golf Gang podcast later on this week. You are listening to the Zabecast. All right, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a blackjack guy. Always have been. It's the one casino game where your decisions actually matter. Hit or stand, double down, split. You're not just watching a slot machine and hoping for the best. MyBookie.ag has live dealer blackjack. Real person, on camera, dealing cards in real time. And a full casino beyond that. Roulette, craps, slots, poker, all of it right on your phone. New players get $25 in casino credit just for making a first deposit. Use promo code ZABE. Go try the tables on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart. Get paid. We're back. Major number two of the year goes to Aaron Rye, R-A-I. A great story when it comes to grinding and overachieving and coming from humble working class backgrounds to conquer a sport that is very, very difficult. And a sport, golf, that is perceived to be exclusive and only for the rich. And only for those who are well-connected is bullshit. Aaron Rye grew up in Wolverhampton in the UK. His dad is from India, was a social worker, taught his kid the game of golf, bought him an expensive set of clubs that he so doted on as a kid. Not only did he clean them after every round, after every practice session, using a pin to scrape out the little dirt in the grooves, but then baby oiled his irons. I'd never heard of that one before. I think some of the guys on my golf trip maybe should put baby oil on their irons. Maybe before they hit would be a good thing. And then he also got iron covers, which, if you know anything about golf, iron covers are the most unnecessary accessory that is sold. And some amateurs still have them. The thing with irons is you let them clank around, clatter around. They're like a set of wrenches. You don't have to worry about them getting nicked up, really, when they're just in the bag clanking against each other. If you hit a rock under your ball, then yes, that will leave a scuff on your iron, but it's not going to affect the playing of it. So iron covers are certainly not a necessary thing, and they're also just another thing, pain in the ass. You can't just grab your 7-iron out and waggle it a couple times and whack. Got to take the iron cover off. Got to put it down. Got to remember to put it back on. And if you're cleaning your club before you put the cover on, you got to take the club, clean it off, get the dirt, get the mud, then put the iron cover. I've seen iron cover sets which have all of the iron covers, so you don't lose any of them, tied together by strings into a central sort of keychain ring, almost like a bass stringer. Oh, man. The pain in the ass tangle that would create for most of us in our golf bags is hilarious. Aaron Rye also wears two gloves, and they're not even golf gloves. I think they're some lightweight utility gloves, or somebody said they were for, I don't know, like handling horses or something. They're very thin leather gloves. They're black, but he wore two gloves, which is also a faux pas. Because the winters in the UK, when he would play golf all year long and obsess about becoming a PGA Tour player, his hands would get cold, so he wore two gloves. Well, he still does today. He wears two gloves today. He's got the iron covers today as an homage to his father, a thank you to his father for doing what he did to get him playing the game of golf. This guy came from nothing, worked his way up to whatever the Challenge Tour is over in Europe to get on the DP World Tour. Then he got on to the Corn Ferry Tour, which is the minor league for the PGA Tour, then worked up to the PGA Tour. Is well-spoken, intelligent, humble. Every other tour pro loves him, and he absolutely deserved every bit of winning the PGA. Went deep, got better every single round. Second round better than the first, third round better than the second, fourth round the lowest of them all. I think the list of guys who have done that in a major is very short, and it includes Nicklaus, Hogan, and somebody else, and now Aaron Rye. Great, great win. Looked like it could have been a huge playoff down the stretch, but it wasn't. What a cool story. Also, Aaron Rye's wife is a professional golfer. So that was nice to see. Not everyone likes it, though, when so-called nobodies win major tournaments. We had this discussion with one of the boys in the golf trip, which is, okay, be honest, Zabe. When you see a nobody leading a major going into Sunday, are you hoping they blow up so they don't win? Because I guess Alex Smalley is another tour journeyman who was at the top to start the Sunday round. Kept saying, because people like me, and gosh darn it, I deserve this. That's the Stuart Smalley bit from SNL back in the day. Anyway, I don't really root for guys to blow up, although I expect them to. Smalley hung in there pretty good. Rahm had a great tournament as a guy who was supposedly in turmoil because of his live contract situation. He was quite comfortable all week in front of the media talking about a situation, smiled, lighthearted. It's great. He resolved his deal with the DP World Tour, so he's going to play there a couple times this year. I've always said the greatest quote I ever read once from, I think it's a Chinese proverb, was to become a beautiful painter, first become a beautiful person, then paint. Some variations of that exist in different verbiage, but I do think it applies to golf. You will not play your best golf if your life is in turmoil. You must be at peace. You must be happy. You must be ready to play the best golf that you can play because the game is super frustrating and gets in your fucking head. DeChambeau, he's not that guy. DeChambeau declined talking to the media all week, said he was taking a break, quote unquote, and missed the cut by a mile. Also missing the cut by a mile, and this was quite the story, was Garrick Higo. Garrick Higo, who had a really good first round, but it would have been two shots better, missed his tee time. He missed it by literally or a second or two. And you have to be within a specific, defined, roped-off area of the first tee. Has to be you, can't just be your caddy. But this is not hard. This is what tour pros do all day, every day, in every tournament they are in. Here was the four-play boys with Kevin Kisner talking about the situation. And, of course, Garrick Higo being pretty much the greatest representation of the current Gen Alpha out there, admitted he was wrong, but also did not want to admit he was wrong, and then made excuses like, well, I don't think it's my job to be out there 10 minutes before my tee time, and it was cold, so we're trying to warm up. Shut up.
I was there on time, but the rule is if you're 1 second late, you're late.
I still don't understand what the hell he's trying to say. Like, he's saying if his tee time was 7:18, he got there 7:18 and 20 seconds, and they gave him two-shot penalty?
I think so.
Yeah, because when I listened to that live, I was like, I still don't know what this guy's trying to prove here. I mean, you're late. And then he says he's on time, but then he's late 1 second. I'm like, well, if you're 1 second late, you're late, right?
He makes a good point, though. Like, I understand that they look based off of the actual, like, seconds on the time. But if that clock is saying 7:19 and he showed up at 7:19, 22 seconds, it's still technically 7:19.
Yeah, technically bullshit. Get there 5 minutes before. 2 minutes. 3 minutes. I mean, come on.
I don't think your tee time is a 60-second interval. I think your tee time is like a 1 second moment. Like, you don't have a tee minute, you have a tee time, and your time is 7:18. And the second it hits 7:18, you are late if you're not there.
Yeah. Riggs with some good truth right there. Now, comes to tee times in golf. The best bit, and you should look this one up.
To come do it. Your spouse to come do it with you.
Is sorry about that. Thank you to TikTok for having the most unfriendly manual control of scrubbing media to try to play it live on a podcast. Nate Bargatze, who is a big golfer, had this bit about playing golf with his wife.
So we go play golf, and I'm sure everybody knows this, but in golf, tee times are very specific. It's 156, it's 204, 213. These are the times. I didn't make it up. This is what they do. Our tee time is 156, and we're driving to the first tee. It's 155. She goes, I need to go to the bathroom and get something to drink. I tell her that is too bad. I said, we tee off in 15 seconds. And she said, I thought it was two-ish. I go, well, you made that up on your own. This is the most rule-following place on earth.
Yes, it is. The rules are the rules, and it's not hard to make your tee time, as evidenced by the fact that this was such a rare thing. Nobody had really heard of it before. We'd heard of caddies who didn't count the number of clubs in a bag. This happened to Ian Woosnam once at the British Open. His caddy had a second driver they were testing on the range. It was still in the bag when he stood on the first tee. Actually played with it for, I think, two holes, two-shot penalty each hole. He played with it, ta-ding, ta-ding, ended up firing the caddy. Oh, yeah, Garrick Higa also fired his caddy. So, way to take accountability for that. Let's move on. The Caitlin Clark burying by the league's marketing people has reached a new absurd low. Caitlin Clark was not featured in the little graphic of, hey, here's two players that you're going to see play against each other in a upcoming bouncy ball game. Something that's been done in the NBA forever, in which if it's the Lakers and the Celtics back in the 80s, they're not putting Byron Scott and Dennis Johnson in the graphic. They're putting Magic and Bird. Put your best foot forward. Do what needs to give people what they want. Just like in the NFL, two teams with good quarterbacks, you put the quarterbacks up there. So you would think that the one player who was able to sell out entire seasons worth of tickets for her team, Caitlin Clark, for the Indiana Fever, would be one of those people that they put on the graphic. But, oh, you'd be incorrect. Here is Jason Whitlock, who says he's a huge WNBA fan. He's a big Caitlin Clark stan, which may be a bit of a shtick. I know a lot of people are going to go, oh, you're going to play this idiot, this grifter. Hey, you can think of Whitlock what you want, but meet him on the merits of the point he's about to make. Take a listen.
And because that league is under the mind control of feminist, lesbian, and black women, they have this irrational hatred of Caitlin Clark. And this weekend, you could see it everywhere. Friday. Let's start with Friday's game, the Indiana Fever versus the Washington Mystics. It was an awesome game, or it turned into an awesome game. Fever, get down double digits, get down big in the game. It looks like it's over. There was only one path back into that game. And Caitlin Clark needed to step into a phone booth and come out of that phone booth as Iowa Caitlin Clark with her Superwoman suit on. And that's what she did. She scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. She nails a three-pointer to send the game into overtime.
That's good.
It's like Caitlin Clark mania is back. Listen to what Stephanie White had to say when throwing softball. Hey, say something positive about Caitlin Clark.
I thought our whole group showed resilience, you know, in that rally. You know, we showed the ability to make tough shots. We had some really good time and score execution moments, offensively and defensively, you know, in those moments. We just have to have more of it consistently.
But what about Caitlin Clark? Can you say one nice thing? Yeah, our whole group showed resilience, and it was really nice. But, man, it is great having Caitlin Clark on the team because she can nail the threes. No, could not do it.
Someone's got to be fired. No way that can be Caitlin Clark's head coach. No way. And then Sunday morning, this is a social media league. And because they've hired so many feminists, Black Lives Matter, LGBTQ women to run everything, they wake up Sunday and the Indiana Fever are playing again on Sunday against the Seattle Storm. And the Atlanta Dream with Angel Reese and the Las Vegas Aces with Asia Wilson, they're playing as well. This is how they promote their doubleheader. Asia Wilson versus Angel Reese. Check. Who are these other two people? I don't know who that is for the Seattle Storm. Nice, attractive young lady. I don't know who that is for the Indiana Fever. Nice, attractive lady. I had to go look it up and figure it out. Oh, that's Raven Johnson, the rookie guard that's averaging 1 point a game for the Indiana Fever and playing 6 or 7 minutes a night. You're not promoting Caitlin Clark? Coming off what she did Friday? She's the reason for the ratings. She's the reading for the record-setting collective bargaining agreement. She's the reason why any of these arenas have larger audiences.
There are no accidents. Whitlock is exactly right. There's no accidents in these things that are done. And when you see it right in front of your face, you shake your head. It's incredible. Now, it's possible that Caitlin Clark is not as good as some would want her to be, and that there is a fear that she would eclipse the coverage of the league. But you got to ride your best, most marketable player, unless you just don't like the element that that most marketable player brings in. Let's end on this. Nobody wants to be accused of body shaming, especially when it comes to a public person for whom you don't know. But there is a social media influencer that is very popular and seems to have a wonderful, smiling, winning way about her, even though we all know that social media, the internet, and the influencer game is fake. Annie Agar is her name. People have noticed that Annie Agar, who was already quite lovely and athletically bodied, if not somewhat skinny and lean, has gotten really skinny. Not only is she really skinny, but she is now really, really tan. And so she posted a picture of her fishing over the weekend. She's a country girl from Michigan. She likes fishing. It's great. But she looked so skinny and so tan, it was shocking. And many people immediately said, whoa, she needs help. And of course, the comments went pretty viral. Maybe she was happy they did so. I was surprised to see that she has responded to this. Basically, Annie Agar says she has cut out refined sugar and that she is walking inclines and doing some other stuff, and that's the reason she's leaner than ever. And okay, maybe sort of. It looks like an eating disorder. Here's what she said.
Comments have gotten a little out of control. I am fine. I don't let comments bother me. I'm very thankful. I have a great support system, great roots, good faith. However, I feel like we're losing the plot a little bit here. I just want to make sure you guys are good because I don't want it to distract from my content. There's been a lot of comments about Ozempic. First of all, I am not on Ozempic. Kids, don't take Ozempic. What the funny thing is, I'm the biggest hypochondriac. So this is kind of an inside joke with my family. I don't even take Tylenol, guys, because the side effects freak me out. So the side effects of Ozempic would put me in therapy, okay? I have learned recently, and I think we get this with social media because we have access to so much. We can learn so much. I've learned calories in, calories out. It's all math. Losing weight's all math. I cut out refined sugar and alcohol. I do drink maybe once a week sometimes. If there's a country concert, a little bit more. It depends on the week. But I cut out all refined sugar. I don't eat any sugar. And I don't drink. And I just eat whole foods. And I incline walk. It's changed my life. Oh. So I appreciate the comments. If it comes from a good place, if it's a place of concern. sometimes I feel like it might just be rage bait. And I have Hardee's Y'all Need Jesus to listen to on bad days because words do hurt. I've been known to have a bad day or two with comments. So just know that I see them. And I just don't want them to be a distraction for you guys, because I love letting you into this side of my life where you see different things that I do, or, you know, with my family, or
you get to see the things that I choose for you to see.
I thought you guys kind of wanted to see that in the off season, maybe, like what else goes on in my life other than football. But if it's gotten to the point where it's a distraction or it's not the content you guys want, just let me know and I'll adjust.
It's not that it's not the content you want. I think it's just pretty clear. Like that photo, you're not, no, that ain't it. A, you're going to shrivel up like a prune. You're going to become like, what was the tan mom's name? Judith Krenzel, who was made famous by the Howard Stern show. Way too much sun. And don't just say, well, it's summer, I'm outdoors a lot. More sunscreen. Once your skin goes, it never comes back. So please, that's number one. And number two, too skinny. Like, don't lie. You can see it in like her legs and her shoulders and the boniness and the arm. I mean, I just, if she was my daughter, I'd be both immensely proud and also very worried. She's 30 years old, by the way. Have you ever seen Annie Edgar with her boyfriend? She's not married, which is fine. She doesn't have to get married. And she may not want to put her boyfriend on social media. I know why the Annie Agar's 30 years old and Paige Spiranak's 33 years old don't ever show a man in their life. A, they may have men coming and going all the time. But more importantly, they know the influencer game is to project this image of, eh, I never see a guy with them. Maybe I could be her boyfriend. I would have so much fun with her. She loves football. She's funny. She likes fishing. I like fishing. It's a calculated thing. And no, you don't have to get married or even have a boyfriend, or they could have a girlfriend. But what's life? What is life if this is all you're going to do? They're going to run themselves. And I think the influencer racket is a scary proposition because it warps everything, warps all reality. There is a real chance they're going to run themselves into their early 40s. And then look around and freak out going, what have I done? Where's my life? Where's meaning? What am I doing here? How old am I? I know I got all these videos on the internet, but was it worth it? Anyway, Annie, you're wonderful. But my God, you're going to have to eat a little bit. Stop doing so much incline walking. And please, sunscreen. Okay, that comes from a good place. I honestly mean that. I think anyone who saw the photo would say, whoa, no. Dial it back just a bit. I got a lot of sun this weekend myself. How was the golf trip? It was grand. Very blessed, wonderful group. It was almost like a men's support group that also played some moderate to terrible golf along the way. Although some guys played quite well. I played pretty well my final round, which was one short of what I had expected. Great group of guys, not without its hiccups. One of our guys got a bit overserved on the first night, didn't check into the Pine Needles Lodge properly, didn't know where his room was. His room was somebody, couldn't find him. We'd all gone to bed. He got locked out. His roommate was asleep. He ends up sleeping on the couch. He ended up missing his tee time as well. Not great. But there was that. And then one of my best friends, older brother type, 11 years older than I am, actually 13 years older than I am, been on every single Malcolm and has driven down with me from Northern Virginia. He let me know on the drive down as I did the obligatory, hey, so how's it going? How's your health? He's like, oh, well, I got this thing. And he explains the thing to me, and I won't go into detail. And I'm thinking, holy shit, really? You're coming on the trip and you have this going on? Are you sure? You sure you're going to make it? He's like, nah, it's fine. It's fine. I've been playing golf at the club last several days. It's been about a week. It's fine. Be fine. I'm like, but this is 7 rounds in 5 days. This is 36, 36, 18. It's going to be hot. Sure? Yeah, it'd be fine. Well, spoiler alert, it was not fine. Day one, he guts through it. Day two, he texts in the morning saying, I'm not feeling great. I'm going to sit the morning out. I go, okay, fine.
As we're getting done with the first round, he texts the group again, not feeling good. I'm going to sit the afternoon out. I'm like, okay. But I kind of understood. I figured he's going to take a bye for the whole day. Should have checked on him because by the time we got done with our 36 on the second day, I asked him, how are you doing? He goes, not good. And that was when I said, holy shit, we got to get you to the ER. So one of our guys, Brian Brzezicki, medic, we call him, a certified EMT, great dude, stepped up, treated our friend as if he was his own father, got him to the ER, got him taken care of. He got discharged at like 4 a.m. In theory, he was going to maybe sleep in on the final day, which is today, Monday, and then I would play and we'd drive home together later that night. But he said to me, he's like, I'd really like to get home sooner. I go, done. Done and done. Was I disappointed I didn't get to play the final round? Of course. But it wasn't a big deal because I'd do anything for this guy because he is such a good friend of mine. And I wanted him back where he was comfortable and healthy and could help get through this thing so that there'll be many, many more golf trips to come. 25th year of the Malcolm coming up. My God, I'm going to make it big. I'm going to make it big and then probably hang it up. If I can make it big enough and good enough with enough wrinkles and doodads and whistles and special things, then I can hang it in the sky and go on to something else. Hell, I might even have a qualifying tournament beforehand. Ooh, that would be good. Did you qualify for the Malcolm? 25 years. Thank you to Pine Needles, Craig Urey, who is their head professional down there, one of their head professionals at the various courses, Mid Pines across the street, Pine Needles, one of the best kept secrets that's no longer a secret anymore down there. I hate it because it's getting more popular and more people are going there. Douchebag golf influencers. We're not one. I'm not one, but still. And it is a magical time. And we have such a great weekend every year. The weekend right between Mother's Day, Memorial Day. That'll do it for me today. Thanks so much for listening. Rate and review. Spread the word. Tell a friend, as we always like to say. Good to be back in the saddle, everybody. Have yourself a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Because I know that you feel me somehow. You're the closest to heaven that I'll ever. The playoffs are here, people. NBA and NHL both going at the same time. That's the best 2 weeks in the sports calendar, right? And it goes fast. More games, more angles, more ways to be right, and more ways to win. That's the fun. MyBookie.ag has it all. And right now, for new players, use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. And if your first bet doesn't hit, they refund it up to $500 back as free play one-time rollover, plus $25 in casino credit automatically. That's called insurance, my friends. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.